Today's shiur is Masechta Becharos Daf Chav Beis. We will begin on Daf Chav Aleph Amud Beis at the bottom of the Amud at the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah of Elazar ben Yaakov Oimer. If a large animal discharged a clot of blood, so the halacha is a razor to cover. It has to be buried, because as we will learn in the Gemara, we assume that there was a child in there, and that child is the Bechor, and therefore it has to be buried. And on the other hand, the Peturim and Bechaira, afterwards, when the animal will have another baby, it won't have a Chi of Bechaira, because, as we've learned so many times, the second animal, even if the first animal, the second baby, even if the first baby didn't really survive, is not considered a Bechor. The Rishonim point out that even though our Mishnah says Behemagasa, it isn't only a Behemagasa that this halacha applies by. In fact, the Rosh's Girsa doesn't mention a Behemagasa. The only reason it says Behemagasa is because commonly this is more likely to happen by Behemagasa than by Behemadaka, but the same rule applies by Behemagasa, by Behemadaka as well. Says the Gemara, Tanav Chiyah. So Chiyah says, when we look at this discharge of blood, this blood clot that is discharged, it's not considered an avela, that the halacha we know is that an avela is matamba maga, matamba masa. Actually, the halacha of maga, of masa, of carrying, is stricter than the halacha of maga. Because the halacha by masa is that not only is the person who carries the avela tamei, but even the clothing that he wears becomes tamei. Whereas by Maga, it's only the person becoming Tamei, not his clothing. So Chiyah says that this discharge is not considered an Avela. Ask the Gemara, if we're saying that it's not Metama, not B'Maga, not B'Masa, a mighty cover, so why is the Halacha that it should be buried? It shouldn't have to be buried. It's not an avela. Answers the Gemara, k'day lefarsama sheniftarim b'chayra. Absolutely correct, says the Gemara. It really doesn't need to be buried. The only reason it's buried is that we should know that there's no chi b'chayra, that this had discharge, and there's no chi b'chayra. So as Taisus already teaches us, the bottom Taisus in Chaf Aleph on the base, that actually we learned the Mishnah Masechta Chulin, that the Mishnah says, HaMavakeres Shepila Shilya Yashlichena L'Klovim, that the Shilya can be given to dogs. And as we explained, the Gemara there says, because we don't need to be concerned that it's Bechor. First of all, it's a 50-50, it's a boy or it's a girl. And even if it's a boy, it may be a Nidma. We spoke so many times, if it doesn't look like its parent, there's no Chi Bechayra, and therefore it could be disposed, given to dogs. Why over here is the halacha different? So Taisus explains, when an animal discharges a shilya, when an animal discharges that, everybody realizes that there was a miscarriage here, unfortunately, and that the next animal, the next baby will not be a chi b'chor. And because the chances that this animal is a b'chor are minimal, that's why we could be more lenient, and the Mishnah Masechta Chulin says, Yashlichena L'Klavim. Our Mishnah, however, says Taisus, is speaking about a discharge of a blood clot, which is not as obvious to everyone that we have here a animal. And therefore, since it's not as obvious to everyone that we have an animal, that's why the Chazal was stricter, and Chazal said that to cover, it should be buried. However, the Mirt Al-Ghazi and the Reishis Bikurim, in helping us understand the Gemara, do very much point out that even though we're saying that it's only being buried because it might be a Bechor, Chazal, they explain, would have never instituted a rule that it should be buried to make this notification, unless the halacha were, as it is indeed, that an animal which is a Bechor that comes out that way needs to be buried. Since there is a halacha, they explain, then were we to know for sure that we have a Bechor here, it needs to be buried. So here we taka don't know that we have a Bukhar here. And in fact, as we just explained, statistically, it's probably not a Bukhar. But now we have another point. We have the point of Kedei Lefarsama, that we want to publicize that the next animal won't have a Chi Bukhar because there was a discharge of a Charora before. That's why Chazal said we should do it. If there would be no Chi Bukhar bearing a Bukhar, Chazal would have never made this rule. Furthermore, the Mefarshim ask that if the whole reason we're learning in our Mishnah is that it should be buried is because we want to be Mefarshim, we want to publicize that it's Peturim and Bechaira, so the Mishnah's order is sort of should have been reversed. The Mishnah said Peturim and Bechaira, that the next animal won't be a Bechar, and in order to move fast in that, Hareza to cover, we should bury it. But the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says Hareza to cover, or Peturim and Bechaira. So Mefarshim answer that the Mishnah is following the order of sequence. As soon as this Charora is discharged, as the Mishnah teaches us, Hareza to cover, must be buried. Now there's another halacha, that the next animal will be Peturim and Bechaira. Ask the Gemara, if we're saying that it's considered a full-fledged Vlad, and that's why the next animal that will be born won't be a Bechar, Lememra, the Vlad Ma'alyahu, if we're assuming that it's considered a full-fledged Vlad, Amai Enim Atama, Leiva Magav Leiva Masa. Why is there a halacha that there's no Tumas Maga Masa? It should be considered a Nevela. Answers the Gemara, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Mishim Butl Beroiv Nogaba. Gemara teaches us that when it comes out of the animal, when this discharge comes out, it comes out together with other material, which are the majority, and that's why it becomes bottle. So there's an interesting Mordechai. The Mordechai says, and this is the halacha that we learned in Sechta Yevamis, we know that when a chalitza procedure is done, so they have to spit. And the Gemara says, what happens if somebody spit, if the woman spit and there was blood with the saliva, she has to do it again. And the question is, why, even if there's blood, isn't most of what came out of our mouth saliva? And the halacha should be that it should be considered a valid chalitza. So all the Rishonim say, and we've mentioned this concept in our shiurim, that the only time Chazal said Taruvus is when we start with two separate materials. The classical example is a kosher material and a non-kosher material. The non-kosher item falls into the kosher, then we say bittel, all the halachas are bittel. But when we start with, and the halachic term is when it's nolde the b'taruvus, from its very inception we have a taruvus, then we don't say bittel. So the question here is, and that's why by that saliva, that from when it came out of the woman's mouth, it was a mixture of dam and saliva, it's not considered saliva, there is no kosher chalitza. So the same thing here, they ask. When it came out, originally when it came out from the womb of the animal, of the mother, it came out with a taruvus. So how do we say bittel beroif? So some explain, the simplest answer, is that while it was in its mother's womb, the animal, the baby, and the other materials were two separate entities. So even though when it comes out from the mother, it's separate, it doesn't make a difference. It's mixed up, it doesn't make a difference. It's not considered nol de b'taruvus. That's one teretz I saw. Another teretz that I saw is that Bechor carries with it a very special rule. That whenever, as we've learned, the first child was born, a boy or a girl with cesarean or not, anything will exempt the next animal from being Bechor. So yes, this maybe is considered nol de b'taruvus. It is considered maybe nolde b'taruvus, but Bechor carries with it special rules that to be exempt, that the second animal should be exempt from being considered a Bechor is fairly easy. But then I saw a third shot from the Stipler. The Stipler makes a very interesting point. The Stipler says that when we have here a situation that this Bechor is being born together with all the material around it, and we're saying it's bottle bereif, it's not to be understood that we don't have a Bechor here. We have a Bechor. Just the Bechor has all sorts of other material around it, and it won't have a Tumas Nevela. But that doesn't mean that the Bechor isn't here. And the way I understand what the Stipler is saying, versus the other Mandamrim, It speaks to a very fundamental issue. The fundamental issue being addressed is a very big machlokes rishonim. What is the halacha, the rishonim debate, if we have one piece of non-kosher meat and two pieces of kosher meat? Certainly with the raisa, the non-kosher meat is bottled. But what will be the halacha if somebody comes in one sitting and eats all three pieces of meat? Some rishonim say it's fine. Bittul. Other rishonim say that bittul doesn't say that what's not kosher became kosher. The same thing here. Do we say that the bechor still exists? And that's far as Hilchos Bechor is concerned, the first animal, this is the bechor, the next animal will not be bechor. That is the stipler's opinion. The others say no, the bittul accomplishes that we don't have anything, that what was bottled is no longer in existence, and that's why they had to say different truths. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, who now proposed this explanation, that we say bittul beroiv, also Rabbi Yochanan Tamei follows his opinion. Don Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lezer of Yaakov, Rabbi Shimon Amr Dava Echad. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Hoda Amor, what he just said. Rabbi Shimon Mahi, what is Rabbi Shimon referred to? The Tanan. Hashir Yubayis, if you have a afterbirth in the house, Habayis Tamei. In other words, Rachman Otzlan, a woman miscarried, and you have an afterbirth, the house is Tamei. Say to Rabbanan not to consider the shilyas of Vlad. Avad the shilyas is not a Vlad. El ain't shilyas b'loy Vlad. Shimrayim Vlad nimukat shilyotzei. That the child dissolved, the afterbirth, the child dissolved in all the other material, and therefore by the time it came out it was bottled, and there is no tumas oil of a tumas mace of this child. And as Tosfos explains the Gemara, obviously both the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shimon subscribe here to the concept that the child becomes bottle in all the other material. The machloikas between the Rabbanan and Rav Shimon is at what point do we say it? Rav Shimon say that we assume that that was the case even before it got discharged. So by the time it discharged, it came out like that. Rabbanan say we're not so certain. It might have only happened after it left the woman's body, and therefore we have to be concerned that there was this nafil in the house. Interesting machloikas Rashi and Tosfos, how to approach ain't shilya b'loy vlad. Rashi says, it's a wife. In most situations, if you have an afterbirth, there was a child there. Tosfos says it's not just a wife. Tosfos says it's a vadai. If you see there's an afterbirth, there must have been a child. So I saw that the Ritva asks, according to Tosfos, the Gemara is very gishmak. Rabbanan's opinion is very gishmak. Ain't shilya b'loy vlad. You certainly had a child here, and it might have only become bottled later. That's why you have tumas oil. But according to Rashi, ask the Ritva, why shouldn't we be makel? Yes, ain't shilya b'loy vlad is usually the case. But there are a myth, according to Rashi, there are a minority situation where you have shilya without a vlad. Furthermore, this haum has a cheskas tahara. So if it has a cheskas tahara, so we should combine the chazok of tahara on the house together with the miyat, that there was no vlad, that Rashi says there is such a miyat, and we should remain tahor. So the Ritva says a very bechidish. Where does the halacha tell us that we can rely on a combination of chazok and miyat? When I don't have anything in my face telling me that I could say differently. Right now I have a shilya in front of me. To make believe that the shilya is not here, and make believe that everything is fine, that chazok and miyat cannot accomplish. Interesting shayla that I saw, that the Michas Yitzchak and Shlomo Zalman discuss. Here the Gemara is saying, ain't shilya b'loy vlad. That every afterbirth certainly has a vlad. So the question that they were asked is that apparently there were doctors that told them that an afterbirth has in it therapeutic value. And the question is, if a woman, Jewish woman, miscarried, and there's the afterbirth, is the afterbirth mutabano as a medicine? So he quotes the Gesher Chaim. The Gesher Chaim discusses, is the chiyuv kvura on a shilya, on an afterbirth. The Gesher Chaim quotes a Yerushalmi that says that there is a chiyuv kvura even on an afterbirth. But the Gesher Chaim himself says that apparently that's not the minig to bury the shilya. But, says the Michas Yitzchak, and Rosh Hashanah Zalman concurs, that even though the minig is not to do kvura on a shilya, but certainly we treat it, as Al Gemara said, especially according to what Taisa said, ain't shilya b'loi vlad, that there must be a vlad, and we know that a mace is also b'hano, that one should not have any hano, even for medicine, unless maybe the kuch nefesh, special circumstances, from an afterbirth. Before we begin the next Gemara, which reflects the Mishnah Masecht Olos, will say a word of Hagdama. When a woman, and this is the way Rashi learns the Gemara, and this is why we're going to explain the Gemara. We know what a halacha is, the tumma beluwa. A tumma that's in the body of a person doesn't give off tumma. So Rachman Tzlan, if a woman is carrying a dead fetus, she wouldn't give off tumma. But at what point is the halacha that if the woman begins the miscarriage and the fetus is going to leave her body, is she matamah the house with tumma soil? The Mishnah, as Rashi explains, is referring to a situation where the woman began labor in one home, and then she moved to another house. And that's where she actually had the miscarriage. And the question is, will that first house also have tumas oil? And as we're going to see in the Gemara, it really depends on the size of the vlad. That's how Rashi learns the Gemara. That's how we're going to learn the Gemara. The Rambam has a very different approach to the Gemara. The Rambam's approach to the Gemara is like this. He says, if we look in this Mishnah, Masechta Olos, the Mishnah says, if a woman started labor, if she can't, so at what point is it considered that she really is in labor? If she can't walk, she can't walk on her own anymore. That's when she's considered in labor. So if she started labor in house one, and if she's so weak that she can't walk to house two, that's when she's considered that she's already in labor. Says the Rambam, that's only if the child that's going to be born or the miscarried, the navel, is going to be of a decent size. But if it's very small, so she could still walk. And therefore, at that point, the simon of walking is immaterial, because the reason she could walk is only because the dead navel is so, the dead fetus is so small. Again, we're going to learn with Rashi. Tanan Hossam. Elin the fallen psychis kever, the navel that's in the house is not considered able to give off tumma, unless it has its head has the circumference of a pika. Ask the Gemara immediately, my kapika, what does that mean? Amrav Huna, kapika shel tzemer. The number of pshatim, pashuk pshat is that when they used to weave, when they had a weaving machine, and they had the threads vertically and horizontal, they used to have like a disc on top of the thread to keep them in place. So it's talking about that disc that's on top of those threads. Amrei Chiba Rav L'Rav Huna, Rebbe Parsh, so he asked him, explain to me. And there's an interesting Yalkut HaMe'iri on this line of the Gemara. He says, we know that Rav Chiya and Rav Huna were colleagues who learned together by Shmuel. Yet in our Gemara we find that Chiya, who is meeting his colleague, his friend Rav Huna, addresses him as Rav Huna. Why? He said, because Rav Huna was Rosh Yeshiva. And even though Chiya and Rav Huna are friends, when Rav Huna was promoted to the position of Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Chiya has an obligation to address him with kavod, and he called him Rav Huna. And he said, Rebbe, Parish, please explain to me, when we speak about the size of the head of this baby, is it Shalshesi? Is it the disc that's on top of the vertical threads, or shall erev on the horizontal threads? Amalei, so which he responded, Tanya, pika shal shesi, the disc on top of the vertical threads, which is a smaller size. Divrei Meir, Yehuda Omer, shall erev the disc on the horizontal threads. Reb Lezbert, said the Omer, mishiru tefifiyos. He says a new shir. The shir is of tefifiyos. Ask the Gemara, my tefifiyos. What does he mean when he uses the word tefifiyos? Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Mishmu Mishur Mabalotzo Reb Tzadik, Kach Hayu Mefarsh Mishlayim, so would they explain Yerushalayim, Kepreda, like a mule, Shekaras Lehatl Meimeha. It's about to urinate, V'nira Pika Metoy Pika, and it has this size of a small pika. So actually, as the Gemara will now focus, we had in our Gemara mentioned three types of pika. The pika that's on top of the vertical thread and the horizontal thread and the double pika. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna makes the following statement. Shmati shtei pikais. I heard about two pikais. Acha shel shesi v'acha shel eir. One is the vertical and one is the horizontal. Vainly lefash. But I don't know. Obviously the halacha distinguishes between the horizontal and the vertical pikais, but I don't know how to relate to it. Kiyos Rav Dimi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Sholosh pikais shmati. I actually heard about three. Acha shel shesi, the vertical one. V'acha shel eirav, the horizontal one. V'acha shel pika gedolim shel sakon. Sometimes they make coarse garments out of sackcloth, very, very poor quality garments, and they use thicker pikais, thicker discs. Vainly lefarish, but I don't know when the halacha talks about which pika. Says the Gemara, Kiyosu Ravin, when Ravin came, Pirush Mishmeid Rabbi Yochanan, he explained when the halacha tells you which pika to use. Shel Isha, when a woman, the case that we're speaking about, who's pregnant and is carrying this child, they were differentiating if it's a small child or a big child. So how do we measure the circumference of the head? Kishal Shesi, with the disc that's on top of the vertical. Shel Behema, when there's an animal, and as Rashi explains, the case of the animal is with somebody, where there's an animal that's experiencing difficult childbirth, or actually a miscarriage, and the roya puts his hand into the womb of the animal. At what point is it considered that he touched the nevela? That we learned at the beginning of a shir, of our shir today, that a nevela is matamba b'maga b'masa. At what point? When that dead fetus is the size of the disc on the horizontal side. Pika gedolus shel sakon. And when we speak about the large pika that's used to make the sack, kritanam, regarding another Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Gush habo mebeis apras, beis apras, we know a beis apras is a field where there was a kever, there was a grave, and it got plowed up, and we don't know where the grave is. Or, mi eretz ha'amim, we know that Chazal said that all of the eretz ha'amim, all of the land of Chutz La'aretz, is to be considered tamei. How much earth has that tuma? Shira shiroi to pika gedol shatzakom. We use the size of this large disc. Shuhu, says the Gemara further, the Mishnah says, kechaim somhamatzupim. It's the size that was used to seal big cargo baggage. V'yeshna b'tzad ha'elyon. And this is the size of the seal that was used, shemagufas hachovas halachmas, that was used to seal casks that were brought from Beis Lechem. So if you have that much of a clot of earth, then you can have tumas aretz ha'amim and tumas beis apras. A very difficult Rashi here, because Rashi says that if you have this much gush of a beis apras, the halacha is that that is matama ba'oil. And the Mefarshim ask that tumas beis apras, although it's tamei, as we have many times in Shas, it's not matama ba'oil. So how do we understand Rashi? The Rashi says it's matama ba'oil. It's certainly a question when we speak about tumas eretz amim, which is certainly not matama tumas oil. So I saw the Mefarshim attempt to explain that there are two types of beis apras. There's a beis apras that I explained, is a sodah shenechresh bakever, a field where there was a grave and the grave got plowed up. And then there's a sodah shenevad bakever, there's a whole grave. The halacha that a beis apras is not metame betumas oil is only by sodah shenevad bakever. But when you have a sodah shenechresh bakever, but when it's a sodah shenevad bakever, then a clock of earth with this size will even metame be oil, perhaps according to Rashi. Says the Gemara. But again, a word of introduction is in order. They used to eat tzir. Tzir is fish brine. It's the brine, it's the juice that emanates from a fish. That juice in itself does not have the ability to be matama, to be tame, tumas oichlin. And then interesting, the Chazanish says an interesting vart. The Chazanish says that even though people ate it, as we'll see in the Gemara, it wasn't identified by Chazal as an oichel, and it's also not a mashkim, because we know there are only seven mashkim. Tzir is not one of those mashkim, and it's not subject to tumas oichlin. However, what they did was, the tzir itself is very sharp. You can't use the tzir itself. And they used to pour water into the tzir. Our Gemara now begins with that understanding. And it says, Halakach tzir ma'amaretz. If somebody purchases tzir for ma'amaretz. And it's important to point out, the issue on the table is not an issue of kashrus. We're not talking about kashrus, we're talking about tumah tahara. And we know that everything purchased from ma'amaretz, we need to be concerned is actually tameh. So it says, Halakach tzir ma'amaretz. If somebody purchases tzir for ma'amaretz, mashika b'mayim v'tahara. Even though the halacha normally is that food to oichlin umashkim that become tamei have no way of becoming tahor, can't go into the mikveh, there is by water a concept of hashaka. What is hashaka and why does it work? Hashaka is you take that entire cup of water that became tamei and you submerge it in the mikveh and then it becomes tahor. Why is hashaka effective? So there's a machlokes in the Mefarshim how to understand the effectiveness of Hashaka. Some explain the effectiveness of Hashaka by saying that we know, we've said many times, that a seed, let's say food becomes tamei. If you take that seed and replant it in the ground, then that seed will no longer be tamei. The food that grows out of that seed certainly won't be tamei. So by putting this water back into the mikveh, it's the same as doing zriya, of planting the seed. That's how some of us explain. Others explain that this is considered that it became Torah in the mikveh. This is the way you toivel water. And just like you toivel anything, it becomes Torah, this will become Torah. So says the Gemara, when you have this cup, do the hashaka. Now the Gemara explains, why will it be effective? For meman of shach, imai rubeninhu, if most of this is water, so the halacha is kimin d'avlo hashaka, as we just said. Hashaka is an effective means of being matar water. Ki avidlu mishaka taharulu. If on the other hand, most of what's in this cup is tzir, tzir la bakabal tamahu. Tzir doesn't have the ability to become tamay, as I said earlier. It's not considered an oichel, it's not considered a mashka. So the Rishonim ask, we learned the Masechta Chulin, that there's a concept that something that's noisein tam never becomes bottle. So ask the Rishonim, let's look at this water. This tzir, as I said a few moments ago, is very sharp. You can't drink the tzir. The only reason you could use the tzir is because you put water into it to dilute it and make it usable. So isn't this water here as a noisein tam? And the halacha is that something that's noisein tam doesn't become bottle. So the Rishonim say a very important word in understanding this entire Gemara. They're saying, where is there a concept that something that's nice and tam doesn't become bottle? That's a din in Hilchus Kashrus. That's a din in Hilchus Issa V'Heter. Here we're not speaking about Issa V'Heter. Here we're speaking about Tumah V'Tahara. Tumah and Tahara work with different rules. And therefore, even though normally the halacha is that something that's nice and tam doesn't become bottle, that rule doesn't apply by Tumah Tahara. That's why it will be effective here. Also, Machlokes Rishonim. Our Gemara speaks about two scenarios where if most of the cup is water or most of the cup is tzir. What will be the halacha? It's 50-50, right down the middle. Half tzir and half water. Some Rishonim say it will still work. Others say that then it wouldn't be effective. Mayika. Because, says the Gemara, if most of it is tzir, so tzir we don't have a worry, an issue of becoming tamei. My ikka, what is your concern? Mishum hanach miyut maya, that you have some water, hanach batla beruba, that water becomes bottle, as we explained. However, makes Rabbi Yirmiyah a very important comment. Om Rabbi Yirmiyah, lo shana litlam mbitai. So again, what's the case that we're speaking about? We have this tzir, this combination of fish brine and water, tamei water, you put it into the mikveh, it's now tahor. And somebody who wants to eat his food b'tahara could stick his bread as a dip into the seer, into this combination, and it'll be fine. However, says the Gemara, interesting concept, avalok deroloi, which means as follows. If somebody has this combination of tamei water and seer, and then you take that combination and you put that into a pot, and now that water combines with the original water, the halacha will be that motzum min es minoi, the water that was originally in the seer that became bottled, together with the water that's in the pot, recombine, you no longer have bittel. Motzum min avlok deiroloi, if you put it into a pot with its water, and you have the water that was combined with its seer, here, motzum min es minoi, these two waters combine for near. And again, as the Mefarshim all explain, this is a halacha that said regarding Tumah v'Tahara. The Tumah v'Tahara have its own set of rules, and the rules that we use for Tumah v'Tahara are not necessarily the same rules that we'll use for Kashrus. Because actually by Kashrus we say a different rule, that we say if you have kosher meat and non-kosher meat, and then you have other ingredients, so the Gemara we learned from Sakta Chulim says, Salaikas minoi kemish einoi, take away the kosher food, and if the non-kosher ingredient, if the kosher ingredients are mevatel, the kosher, the non-kosher meat, you're fine. So we see again, Tosfos makes this point, that the halachos of Issa v'Het and the halachos of Tumah v'Tahara are very different. But here we see the concept of Motzah minas minoi v'niyah. Says the Gemara, Yosra Rav Dimi v'kam l'ash matzah. So Rav Dimi was sitting and learning this Gemara, Omer le'abaya, so Abaya asked him, is this indeed the halacha? V'chi tumah shebatla, the water that was combined with the tzir, that was batla, chaz v'nira, does it re-emerge? Amalei, so he says, v'atloi tizbra, do you not agree to this halacha? But not. There's a Mishnah Masechta Trumas. A word of introduction here too as well. We know that even though normally the shear bittel, shishim, or the shear bittel is rive, by truma, it only becomes batla when you have a 100-to-1 ratio. So the Mishnah Masechta Truma speaks about a situation where you had a saw truma shenafla lemei chulin tahirim. You have a ratio of 100 chulin tahirim, 100 saw of chulin tahirim. They were never mukshal kabel tumah. They never became susceptible to tumah. Because if they became susceptible to tumah, we'd have a real issue when the saw truma tamei falls into it, that they make them tamei. So we're talking about they're not tamei. And now this saw falls into the rest. Rav Elazar Omer Teirum V'Tirkus. Rav Elazar says, take out a saw and let it rot. And there's a number of points to be made. The Rishonim make the first point that we could understand, they say, that let's say you had a saw of Truma Tahira that fell into 100 saw of Tchulin Tahirin. So Chazal wanted to take out a saw and give it to the Kayan. Because we don't want, just because it came bottled, that the Kayan should suffer a financial loss. But here, what's going to happen? The saw of Truma Tamei fell in to the other. We're going to take out a saw, and the Gemara of Elazar uses very strong wording. He says, Tirkev, we let it rot. It's not even Sreifa. We're not even burning. We just have to let it useless. So what's the point? So Mefarshim explain. Since, as we just said, the halacha is, when a saw of Truma Tahira falls into 100 saw of Chulin Tahirin, we can well understand why we have to take out a saw and give it to the Kayan. Chazal didn't want to differentiate, and in all situations they required, according to Belezer, a saw be removed. One point. Another important point is that Belezer is making a very interesting point. The Yerushalmi speaks about this. Belezer says that a saw fell in, and we have this mixture, take out a saw. So the Yishami asks, how does Rabbi Elazar look at the saw that he's requiring you to take out? Does he mean to tell you that you could assume that that's the saw Truma Tomato fell in? Or Rabbi Elazar is only saying it l'chumra, but he can't confidently say that that's the saw that fell in. You have no way of knowing it. Shani Omer, he saw Shnafla, he saw Shah also. The Chum Omer, Tal of a Teichel. The Chum say that you should take it it should be, and here we're going to learn the Gemara with Rashi. I'll tell you Tosfos Pshat, but Rashi's Pshat is that since you have this ratio of 100 to 1, so as we said, whatever you have the ratio of 100 to 1, it becomes bottle. It becomes bottle. But since we don't want the Kahanim to have a loss, we started off with a Sar Truma. It belongs to the Kahanim, not to me. I have to give the Kahanim, according to Rashi, not an actual Sar. I have to give them a value of a Sar. Tosfos says we have to give them, according to Rabbanan, an actual Sar. That's the Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. So again, the Chum say Tal of a Teichel. And now, since we don't know which is the Sar that's Tamei or not, and we want to be careful not to eat something that's Tohor as Tamei, the halacha is we should eat it Nekudim. Nekudim means dry, Oikloyos, roasted. Roasted, again, there's no water involved. Oitilish b'mei peiris, or you should do it with fruit juice that is a machshel kabel tuma. Oitischalik leisis, or you should keep it very small pieces of dough, less than the sheer kebeya. Ovachloy b'makom echad kebeya. There should not be in any place a kebeya. We should eat this entire mixture that way. Interesting question that the Taz poses. Taz asks that we have this problem here. The saw fell in, and we don't know what to do with the mixture. We know, the Gemara says in many places, says the Taz, that Truma is considered like your Magdish. It's considered like a nether. I designated this to be the Truma. The halacha is when you make a nether, you could be shoiling your nether. You could have your nether annulled. So ask the Taz, why don't you just go and have the entire Truma designation annulled and all your problems will be solved? So the Taz says that's not a legitimate reason to annul the nether. Because the hafrasha was done properly. Now you have a problem as a result of a mixture, that isn't a good enough reason to have the nether annulled. That's the Taz's approach. The Kudus HaKesef disagrees. The Kudus HaKesef says that halachically it would be acceptable. The Gemara is referring to a situation where you didn't do it, you didn't have a reason to do it, you didn't know to do it. The Tanya law, and the Braisa continues, also Chulin or Belezer. When we speak to according to Belezer with those Chulin, Matahaleim, what did Belezer say with the remaining Chulin? Belezer said you should take out everything, one saw you should take out, and the rest you should leave. Yoichlu, Nekudim, Oikloyus, Oyeloshim, Paris, Oitischalik, Leisis, he says the same as the Rabbanon. The 100 saw that are left over, you have to be careful not to let them become Tamei. Vam Ula, and Ula explained, Matam, what's the reason? You may bring some more Chulun Tameim. The Void Minze, that will combine with your original Tama. Sava Avat Lino Beruba, but that isn't true. Why? Because kiven deka hai mashuhu, since you had chulin from tuma at the beginning, and now you're adding more tuma here, matz manis minai, they combine veneer. So what do we see from here? The same concept of mitzvah manis minai veneer. Amalei, to which he said, im tuma ereres tuma, here, tahara ereres tuma, it's not the same type of situation. There it's tuma with tuma, here it's tahara with tuma. Just before we end the shiur, it's fascinating that the Baal Shem uses this concept of Motz Minas Minoi Veneer to speak about the reason we make a bracha. He says when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created anything in the world, any food, anything in the world, everything has Kedusha in it. And then, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the Kedusha in it, it comes down to this world and you have a piece of bread, you have a piece of meat, you have whatever. But how are you able to bring out the Kedusha of the food? By you saying a bracha. And when you say a bracha, you say the name of Hashem. Matzah minas minoi. The Shem Hashem that you articulate with your mouth connects to the Kedusha in the food, veneer, and it raises the food to a higher level, and it makes you echila, it makes you eating to an avodas Hashem.